Brian Burke joins us this morning. And Brian, look at the impact that you've scarred some media members here, that Rick Dhaliwal scampers out of the studio upon your presence here, still feeling tormented from the days when you were the boss here.
I don't know who he is.
Yeah, you're not missing much. But what it tells you is you know that Burke, you can't win with a guy like that.
Who... No, I remember Rick. He's a good guy. He's playing this up. He's actually... I treated him very gently, I thought, but maybe he thought it was a little rougher than that.
Let me ask you this, because you played Johnny Gaudreau when you were a GM. What did he play, one game for you when he came out of college?
Yes.
So we had this discussion the other day. When Quinn Hughes is finished, I think you have to bring him and let him play, whether it's a handful of games or a little more. But now the world is changing after that entry-level deal. Do you think that will go into play a little more for GMs, whether they burn 1 year for what could be two or three games?
Well, it's kind of a catch-22 for the GM. So if you get a player, not Quinn Hughes is a poor example because he would have to wait 3 years. But with Johnny Gaudreau and these other guys, you're looking at that August 15th deadline. That's why you burn the year, because that player, as of August 15th, is an unrestricted free agent in most cases or goes back to school and is unrestricted the following year. So it's not typically entry level, or not guys in that draft year that usually play this card. It's usually guys that have been drafted 2 or 3 years before, and they say, either burn a year and I'll come right now, or I'm going to wait and go back to school for one more year and become unrestricted like a Vesey or a, you know, a Schultz or these other guys. So my guess is teams will be more circumspect about it, but not too much more, because that guy can go back and go anywhere he wants as of August 15th.
So you got to still play nice in the sandbox and keep these kids happy and kind of dangle that carrot then in the long run, right?
Well, you might not with a Hughes. You might not with a guy who's his draft year. He'd have to go back now after drafting for 3 more years, so it's not as realistic a card as a Besser, who plays 2 years at North Dakota and says, either burn a year and take me out now or I'm going to come back. So I don't think it's as applicable to Hughes as it is to other guys like Gaudette, like Besser, guys that have played a couple years at university.
But now the entry-level deals coming with on the heels of Nylander in the second one probably comes into the equation for GMs as to, okay, we better have some money because we're going to have to pay some of these guys a lot quicker than we thought.
Yep. Yeah, the world moved. And this is not the first time this has happened. When Dustin Penner signed an offer sheet, yeah, with Edmonton, I and Anaheim was forced to eliminate the second contract. So we were so terrified. We were up against the cap. We won a cup. We had huge cap issues, and we were worried, okay, the next two guys, one of them will get offer sheeted as Getzlaf for Perry. So we overpaid those guys. They went right into serious dough right out of their first contract. So it's not the first time it's happened. But it's going to happen, you know, it's happening now, and it's going to happen again. This of that group of these people you're talking about, Besser, Pettersson in a year, Tkachuk, Liney, you know, they're far better players than William Nylander. So where does that leave us with that? And the answer is, I don't know. And I can't imagine, of the 700 players in the NHLPA, watching 20 guys get paid way before their turn and way more than they should have, I don't imagine that's going to sit too well with the 650 other members.
Now, on the heels of that offer sheet for Dustin Penner, you never did rent that barn, did you?
No. I never even made the offer. I mean, it's a great story, but people misconstrue the story that I called Kevin and said, we're renting a barn and doing it. What happened was, Kevin went on radio in Edmonton and said, Brian Burke, you know, screw him anytime, any place. Well, that's not how you challenge someone to a fight where I come from. So I called Slats, and I was outside of my backyard in Newport Beach, and my cell phone worked better in the backyard. And I thought my wife at the time, Jennifer, was upstairs and couldn't hear any of this. So I called Slats, and I said, that SOB just challenged me to a fight. I said, here's how you challenge a guy to a fight. I said, on August 1st to the 3rd, I'm going to be in Lake Placid. USA Hockey used to have had a tournament in Lake Placid the first week of August. I said, I'll be there from the 1st to the 3rd. I'm staying at the Holiday Inn. you tell Kevin to get his ass there. I'll run a barn. I'll kick his ass. I'll drive him to the hospital, and then I'll go back to my hotel room. And so that was the offer. Now, it was never communicated. Kevin was not afraid of me. I know that. You know, I'm not afraid of him either. I mean, guys like us aren't generally afraid of each other. So, but I don't know if Slats, my wife at the time, Jennifer, heard this and said, have you lost your mind? I'm like, oh, no. I didn't know she heard it. So I don't know if she called Bettman or Slats called Bettman, but I got a call from the commissioner about an hour after that, and he said, I hear some crazy rumor about you're planning on actually going through with this fist fight with Kevin Lowe. I said, well, yeah. And he said, I will suspend you both for longer than your contracts if you go through with this. That was the end of it. So Kevin never turned down a challenge. He wouldn't do that.
People who
he
don't
would have been there. He would have shown up on time.
Brian Burke joins us as he does every Thursday. For people who don't know, and Seabull, I don't know if you remember, but when you would walk into GM Place in the office area, I think was gate 16, there was a big picture of you all bloodied up when you were playing.
Yeah.
Was that college or you were playing pro back then, Berkey? Like, what kind of player were you?
Not a very good one.
No, so but
I mean, I wasn't. I didn't start playing hockey till I was 13, and I never caught up. So I wasn't very good. I was big. I was smart. I was reliable. I was reasonably tough. But that picture doesn't even have a good story. I got my gloves on in that picture. I got a teammate coming with a stick.
Oh, okay.
And I'll tell you who it was. It was Drew Callender, who just retired a couple years ago from the Regina Police Force. And after he played with me, he was a Canuck briefly, played for the Canucks, right winger from Regina. And his brother Jock was maybe a little better known.
Yeah, played in Pittsburgh, I think, didn't he? Jock Callender a little bit?
Yep. And Drew got me, we were playing a little keep-away game after practice in Halifax. We were playing in Halifax, and he got me in the forehead with a stick. And I was yelling at him as I skated toward the bench. We were all going to the movies that afternoon. We had an off day. We had practice on an off day, and I had to go get stitched up in Herring Cove, Nova Scotia. And I was yelling at Drew on the bench. His nickname was Joe, because we had a French guy on our team who couldn't say Drew. So I was yelling at Joe on the bench. And the guy snapped the picture. I didn't know anything about it. But it's a great picture, just not a great story.
Yeah, it's probably. I'm surprised you tell us that. It would have been better if it was
scared,
part of a brawl.
I remember hearing you had scared all the Grizzlies management in those days when you had that up on the
yeah,
line. They were like, who is this
funny
guy? Hey, tell me this. A story out here. Last game, Nick Goldobin was a healthy scratch by Travis Green. He goes up in the press box. You know, here's a kid who's been – he's 23. He's been playing on a line with Elias Pettersson for the vast majority of this season. How long do you Travis Green described it as a reset. How long does a reset last, and how long is too long, or how quick do you got to get somebody like this back in the lineup? Is it one game? Is there an appropriate sort of time? One game, two games, three games? What do you say?
Well, he's going back in. Travis and I have been texting this morning. Believe it or not, you guys like to tell these stories about Kevin Lowe. I like to talk about the Canucks. So I usually get input, and people who are listening should know this. I don't work for the Canucks. I'm going to say what I think about the Canucks, but I try to get input from Jim Benning, who's a friend and played for me back in the day, and from Travis Green, who's a friend and played for me from back in the day, to get some sense where we're going. So Travis says he's going back in. Here's the problem with Goldobin, and this isn't Travis talking. This is me talking. Nikolai Goldobin, his draft year, was a guy you'd go in and you'd watch him play, and you'd think, that guy did nothing. He's a very economical player. He's a very low-output player. It looks like he's not trying. It looks like he doesn't care. And then you get in the press room afterwards, you're like, geez, he had 3 points. You look at his scoring totals in junior, they're phenomenal. He's a gifted guy. But he shows this compact, economical style, doesn't show effort, and so you tend to discount him. And a guy his age taking a night off in the press box, I think it is a reset. To me, everyone thinks it's this cataclysmic thing, and sometimes it's like, hey, kid, take a deep breath. Watch the game. Sometimes when you watch the game slows down for you, and then he's going to go back in, and I expect him to, I like this player. Historically, I haven't drafted a lot of Russians. You guys know that. Historically, I haven't fallen in love with a lot of Russians. You guys know that. But I like this player. I just think you got to get used to watching. You're not going to see a Bo Horvat type obvious effort But this guy still finds a way to get it done. So I wouldn't quit on this guy just yet. He's got too much skill.
So many people are going, hey, he's third in scoring. There are so many other options to sit out and let watch for a game. Could Travis or Jim or Benji, as you call him, could they ever go to Louis Erickson because of that price tag and ask him to go up and watch one?
Well, they can do whatever they want.
But will they?
Well, here's what – people shouldn't hate Louis Erickson. They should hate his contract. Like, Louis Erickson is one of the best people I know in the game. I love this guy. And he's a good player. He's overpaid, and people resent that. People in Canada hate overpaid players way more than they hate him in the States. And that's why I tell young GMs in Canada. I told Mark Bergevin that when he first became a GM. I told Brad Treliving that. I mean, you look at the fuss over James Neal not contributing in Calgary. You think if he's making 2.5, people would care? But he's not. So people are focused on Louis Erickson's contract, which I hate too. I get it. It was a bad contract. Okay, we've all done them. I'd like to get some of the contracts I did back. But the fact is, he's a quality person. He's helping Elias Pettersson immensely. Like, this is a valuable guy to have on your team. He does things right. He works hard. He's just overpaid. And a player who's overpaid, that's our fault. That's not the player's fault. And anyone who says, this guy's overpaid, I'd say to them, okay, your son comes home tomorrow and says, the Vancouver Canucks want to give me $6 million a year. And you say to him, no, son, you'd be overpaid if you took $6 million a year. You'd say, here's a pen. So when we make a mistake on a player, it's not the player's fault. Louis Erickson provides value to that team. He's a great guy. They got a young Swede who needs to be shown the right way to play. Louis does everything right. Comes to practice early, gets dressed early, goes out early, works his ass off, comes in and goes and eats a healthy meal, gets enough rest. These are patterns young players need to learn. These are practices and ways of living that young players need to see. This player adds value. He just doesn't add $6 million worth of value.
But don't you think that weighs into the equation of Travis thinking, you know what, let's just sit him for one?
No, Travis didn't sign this guy. Travis didn't sign Louis Erickson. He's got. If he went to Benji and said, I want to sit him out, Benji would say, sit him out.
You think he's still effective right now in terms of what, like, I hear a lot of times, and we've had this conversation, hey, you know what, if his cap hit is $2 million, we're not talking about this. Do you think he's still an effective player right now?
Yes, I'd like to see him get more done. But little things he does, like chipping in and still being the first guy in, he still provides value. But again, when I come on the show, Perry, I'm not going to debate this stuff with you. I'll tell you what I think, and you're free to hang up afterwards and say, I don't think that's true, but you keep pushing back on me on Louis Erickson, and I'm going to say, let's talk about something else.
No, I'm just curious because I think, Brian, that number
weighs
into the occasion. No, that's fine. I mean, you give me your opinion. That's great. I'm just telling you what we get back from feedback in the last 48
hours.
Right,
what you get, and that's what you get back from feedback, I'm sure is important. It's not to me.
Well, let's move on, shall we?
I like how you get it every once in a while. It's nice to he's starting to be an equal opportunist here in terms of giving it back.
Ken Hitchcock had his team come back, pulled the goalie, they win in overtime, they've been successful. Is this now the formula that the Oilers need, and Hitch has got them thinking about defense?
Well, they haven't made major adjustments to the answer is yes. They've made some adjustments. They haven't made major adjustments. If you talk to the players there, they've made a couple adjustments. It's more a mindset. Ken is a very grinding guy. Like, he's on them all the time, and it gets results. And it was a heartbreaking loss for St. Louis last night. It was a bad mistake at the end by Tarasenko, in my opinion, to his failure to block that last shot that tied the game. And then you see McDavid work his magic in overtime. So, you know, my view, Hitch and I've been friends with Hitch for 30 years. I remember when he was a guest coach in training camp with the Canucks. Perry, you'll remember that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guest coach with the Canucks in training camp on the island, somewhere, Duncan or one of those places we train. He's made a difference. There's no question about it. But he grinds these guys. He's on them right from the anthem on. And so they're responding. And they're getting some good performances out of people. They've turned it around short term. The biggest thing to me is, not the coach, it's the goaltender. The goaltender's been unconscious, and so they're getting great goaltending. last night, I was so happy for Cam Talbot. He bounced back last night. He needed to have a game last night, and he did, and his teammates played well for him. And so now they got, because you need two goalies you can play. Even if you only need the backup guy to play 20 games, you need 20 games out of them. So I was impressed with their victory last night. Again, heartbreaking loss for St. Louis at home, but Edmonton stayed with the plan and tied it up late and found a way to win it in the overtime in the shootout.
Sportsnet 650.